Morning. My name is Jules Zacher, and I represent the Center for Arms Control and Nonproliferation. Just by way of background, very quickly, the center is an arms control group here in Washington, and the focus is to work with various organizations to contain the growth and proliferation of nuclear weapons.
How's it going?
Not well, Your Honor. We're down. We're coming back, hopefully. Bottom line is, this case is a very interesting one, in my opinion, because it involves the run-up to the war in Iraq, at which time various intelligence documents started to come out in regards to the existence of weapons in Iraq. And as you well know, I'm sure, when our troops went into Iraq, they found no weapons of mass destruction. The president then appointed the commission, co-chaired by Judge Silberman, as you probably know, and Senator Chuck Robb from Virginia, to look in what happened. This is a presidential commission that was appointed. There was various other members of the commission who looked into this. There was a staff that was appointed. They accumulated approximately 75,000 documents in the course of their work. The issue that, quite frankly, propelled me in regards to this case was the documents that they looked at to reach the conclusions that they did. The commission issued a report, I believe in March 2005, basically suggesting various recommendations to the intelligence community to prevent a repeat of what happened in Iraq. The suit was filed under the Federal Advisory Committee Act, which is a statute that was passed by Congress to oversee the various commissions and committees that had been appointed over a course of time by the president to look into various issues. The executive order that the president issued in this regard was to have this commission look into why there was no weapons in Iraq and to, as I said, suggest changes to the intelligence gathering community and to prevent this from happening again. I think the issues that you have to wrestle with basically are as follows. Number one, whether or not the commission is subject to the Federal Advisory Committee Act. That's a key issue, and I'll talk about that in a moment. And number two, if in fact the commission is subject to FACA, the Federal Advisory Committee Act, will or should a writ of mandamus issue to force the commission to release the documents that have been requested by my client? I think those are the two main issues, and now I'll suggest that I'll address them at seriatim. Number one, in my opinion, and I think the record will reflect this as well as the case law, the commission, in fact, is subject to FACA. It is subject to FACA because this is a presidential commission appointed by President Bush to look into the issues that I had mentioned earlier. It is a presidential commission. It is not a CIA commission. It is not an intelligence community commission. And I have to be honest with you, I've looked at Public Citizen, the Supreme Court opinion that deals with FACA and a lot of the case law, and it looks like oftentimes the courts that have wrestled with this statute with FACA is trying to figure out a way to reach the conclusion it wants to reach. For instance, in Public Citizen, the Supreme Court opinion, they use the Section 3 definition of the term utilize. And the reason why that's important is because in the statute itself, there are two parts that talk about establishing and utilizing a commission. The first section of Section 3, which is the section that I think that this falls under, namely that the commission was established and utilized by the president. He authorized the commission, he had it staffed, and he utilized the report that was produced by the commission. And I think the establish and utilize words go together. The government is taking.
Also ordered that it be utilized by the CIA.
Good point, and I think the reason that was put in there was just so that we could be here today. That I'm not saying anything nefarious on the part of the president, but on the other hand, that was thrown in as a kicker, so to speak, at the tail end there of that order, so that this whole issue of the Central Intelligence Agency can be discussed within the context of this commission.
I don't think that necessarily follows. Why wasn't it put in there not as a kicker, but to make absolutely clear that this was accepted from FACA?
Because the person that wrote, or persons that wrote the executive order knew full well that this has always been an issue, and they wanted to make sure that, in fact, it was not covered by FACA.
Well.
That's one man's, but that's one person's opinion. That's why you're here. You're to decide whether or not that was done properly or not. I mean, the executive order, I'm sorry, the executive order, they can put whatever they want in an executive order. It doesn't make it happen. It doesn't make it judicially correct or jurisdictionally correct.
The Supreme Court's gyrations in Public Citizen were for the purpose of avoiding this severe separation of powers issues that FACA raises. And that's why utilize was interpreted, and interpret as a charitable word in that sense. And in your case, it's just the opposite. If you interpret utilize in a very narrow way, then you have to confront this severe separation of power. So if the guiding principle, according to the Supreme Court, is you construe utilize to avoid separation of powers issues, you lose, don't you?
No, because I don't think there is a separation of powers issues in this case. I think the statute is clear that it's not a question of, you know, an ABA committee, whether or not they fall under the jurisdiction of FACA.
That's a statutory question. I'm talking about separation of powers. Doesn't the president have the authority to consult whomever he wants in private?
Absolutely.
Under the Constitution.
Absolutely. And I don't think that's an issue here, because I'll tell you why. Because in this case, we've asked for non-classified documents, Your Honor. This is not a question of asking for national security documents that the government thinks they should not release to us. We're perfectly willing. There's 75,000 documents here. We're asking for them to vet those documents. We're asking for documents that they think in their minds are non-classified. If the president thinks that there's something in there, a document, or someone on his behalf thinks there's a document that goes to his ability to get opinions from somebody, so be it. We understand that. We haven't gotten one document, Your Honor, out of 75 documents. And I think
So are you saying that he has to claim deliberative process privilege for every piece of paper?
No, he can claim whatever he wants. He can claim that. He can claim it's a national security issue. We're not arguing with that. We're arguing that 10B under the statute says you release the documents. This is not a question of a, this is not a volitional issue. This is, I'm sorry, a discretionary issue. The statute is clear. It says you release the documents.
The statute says you must release the documents, some class of documents. And the release of the documents would bring the statute into confrontation with the separation of powers issue, because the president says this is the Congress intruding into the advice he receives.
We bow to the president, Your Honor.
Then, I'm sorry?
I said we bow to the president. If he makes that decision,
well,
that's fine.
If we bow to the president, means we interpret the statute in such a way as to avoid that.
But how do you know what's in the documents? How do you know that all 75,000 documents go to that issue?
No, but you're confusing the question whether they're confidential or top secret documents with the question whether the president has the authority to withhold them regardless whether they are or not. And we recognize in the Cheney in bank case that there are severe separation of powers problems. And to say that the president has to, that the only privilege the president has is executive privilege, means that and there's authority for the proposition that only the president himself personally can invoke executive privilege, is to say that the president has to sit down in the Oval Office and go through 75,000 documents.
I'm asking for that, Judge, obviously. Yeah. We're asking for someone to take a look at those documents. Obviously, the president is not going to do them. There are right now with the National Security Council. There have been, I know there's the Clinton litigation ongoing right now with many, many documents. Certainly, the government has it within their resources to make that search. It's not as if it's, the government makes that argument that it's an overburdensome search. I don't think it is. We're saying that, you know, we don't know. I mean, the whole point of this lawsuit was to open up the government and look at these documents, which is what FACA is designed to do, okay? It's designed for that very purpose. It's somewhat similar to FOIA. We want to know what is in the documents that the government looked at. I'm sorry, the commission looked at in reaching the conclusions that they did. I mean, this has been a very controversial issue, and I understand that. There's been allegations that there was cherry picking going on in regards to the documents that were looked at. We want to know that. We want to know what's out there, and to just say, okay, fine, that there's a constitutional issue here, then, and separation of powers, and that cuts it off. I don't think that's correct. I think that, this, as I said, the statute is mandatory on its face and requires these documents to be turned over. And more importantly, what happened at the district court level, I find very interesting. In Judge Collier's opinion, she basically, for the first time, is saying that four trumps three, 4B, section 4B of the statute trumps three, namely that establish and utilize as defined in public citizen, now it applies to the Central Intelligence Agency. And I don't understand how you can have two parts of the same statute establishing and utilizing something by a president and also being established and utilized by the Central Intelligence Agency. You can't have the same thing happen.
You have it established by the president and utilized by the CIA?
No, that's the way meeting public citizen in some of the cases that she cites as well as my brief, they have to be read together, establish and utilize. You can't establish and you don't break them apart. So it's both.
Where is that in your brief?
I thought I said that in Cummock. Is the, let me be up here 1 second. Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's the only part.
Well, I think it's in public citizen. I think they use the language. It's together. It's not just, you can't break it apart.
Well, if that was part of the court's reasoning in public citizen, where the effort, where the courts was driven to read, utilize, and to read the section in such a way as to avoid the constitutional issue. Why does that carry over into the current case? Where avoiding the constitutional issue, as Judge Randolph pointed out, requires a different issue.
Because again, I don't think there's a separation of powers issue here. I think it's mandatory on its face, and that's why I think you can avoid that issue. I think it, the woolly verb problem that the justice has had in public citizen doesn't apply in this issue. I think it's mandatory.
Can I ask you to explain again what you meant by you can't take established or utilized apart? I mean, yeah. The ABA Standing Committee was not established by the president, so utilized stands on its own.
Well,
I don't understand what you're saying, why you can't look at them.
I believe, Your Honor, that you're right. It was established by the American Bar Association and not by the president. But I think that in public citizen, that the argument was because even though it was established by the ABA and utilized, it was utilized by the Justice Department for vetting. I think they talked about management and control issues that.
But they could only have been looking at utilized because it was not established. It was a private group of people. And FONCA goes to private groups of people who are utilized by either the president, the CIA, an agency, or so forth.
Well, okay. My understanding was that with this case, I understand what you're saying. The president established and utilized but that's my point, that how could you then have the Central Intelligence Agency establishing and utilizing it as well? There's a direct conflict in the statute.
Well, they don't have to establish and utilize it. They just have to utilize it or establish it. I mean,
that's what the statute 4B. Says, right? Utilize or establish.
Four B takes it out of FACA if the CIA either establishes it or utilizes it or both.
Yeah, I understand the or part and I understand what you're saying, but I believe there is some case law, unfortunately, I just can't put my finger on it right now, that they're to be read in conjunction with one another.
You have used your time.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Did you ask the time for rebuttal?
I did.
I'll give you a minute.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. May it please the Court, Elisa Klein for the National Security Council. Very briefly, as indicated in our briefs, this claim fails both as a threshold matter and on the merits. This is an action for mandamus-type relief, and we're not aware of any FACA case in which a duty has been imposed on a subsequent custodian after the committee becomes defunct. And it's particularly anomalous here since the National Security Council is not an agency under either the APA or under the FOIA, and that itself reflects separation of powers concerns. And on the merits, established and utilized are separate means by which an advisory committee can be encompassed or exempt under the FACA. And here, there's no question that the CIA was directed to utilize the committee and its work. And the separation of powers considerations are paramount because of the president's decision to establish this committee himself. And there's no doubt that if the president had directed the CIA to establish this commission or to control it, that it would be within the exemption. But this is a commission that was designed to look at perceived intelligence failures. So, of course, the president did not want the CIA in control of the commission. So the president chose the members himself, made the commission directly accountable to himself and within the executive office of the president. And there is no basis for penalizing the president's choice to have this degree of independence.
What if the president established a task force on health care and said, and then also in the executive order directed that it be utilized by the CIA?
We're not here arguing that any task force established by the president or any other agency becomes exempt merely because the CIA, among lots of other entities, utilizes it. But here, the...
How do we avoid that? How do we agree with you in this case and not in the case in which the task force on energy reserves or what have you proves to be of interest to the CIA after it's completed and so they utilize it?
Well, we have, for that reason, tried to underscore both that the commission's mandate was to investigate both intelligence operations and intelligence capabilities, that the CIA was, you know, itself the object of the investigation and was being directed for reasons that, you know, would be surprising to no one because these are directions about how to improve intelligence operations. And we don't believe...
So you don't have that problem here, but in every FACA case, there's a decision that has to be made before the committee comes into being about whether it's going to be subject to FACA, because the membership will be, you have to determine what the membership is, and FACA governs that, and then you have to publish all this stuff in the Federal Register and all of that, and then you have to announce when the meeting, so all of this takes place before the advisory committee or the committee gets up and running, right?
That's correct, and this commission did consider whether it was subject to the FACA and said in its Federal Register notices, we are not subject to the FACA, though they nonetheless took steps that might have otherwise been taken by a FACA committee to keep the public apprised of its work.
So your submission is simply that if in the executive order establishing the advisory committee, if it says if the president directs the CIA to utilize it, then you don't have to get into any of that. That's it.
Whereas here, the mandate of the commission is to look at intelligence operations and capabilities. And, yeah. We would be happy to leave for another day if the mandate is unrelated to the CIA's mission.
Right. Okay. So that's how we would write the opinion?
Yes, Your Honor.
That it has to be utilized, what, in good faith, or it has to be utilized, that has to be restricted to the CIA's statutory duties? How would we say that?
Well, the court could say, certainly looking at the subject matter of this commission, the president easily could have directed the CIA to establish it, could have said, this is a commission that's looking at intelligence operations and intelligence capabilities, and so I want you, the CIA, to either pick the members or run the commission. And here, instead, the president, in order to ensure that there'd be independence, did not want the CIA to pick the members or the CIA to run the commission, and said, I'm picking the members, but you, CIA, are to use these recommendations because they pertain to your intelligence operations. And so under circumstances like that, then there's no question that that utilize is broad enough to encompass that circumstance.
Well, I'm not sure that that helps us, though. As Judge Randolph points out, the determination of whether FACA applies should be made at the outset. Right? So if the CIA is not a party to the commission, it's not directed to utilize the report of the commission, it's not a member of the commission, but the commission then develops things that turn out to be of interest to the CIA, which then utilizes
them. I'm sorry, we're resting in part on the direction in the executive order to the CIA to utilize.
To say if there's no such direction, then it's not exempt.
Well, we would be willing to reserve that issue for another case if it ever comes up. I don't believe this exemption has ever come up in the history of the FACA. Unless there are further questions, we'll rest on our brief.
Can I ask a question? If we didn't have this direction that it be utilized by the CIA, and the president simply established it by executive order and said that in the executive order he was going to utilize it, what would your position be under public citizen?
And
the meaning of utilized.
I'm trying to make sure I understand the question. And the CIA is not to utilize, or the CIA is to utilize the recommendations?
The direction in paragraph 2D is gone.
Well, then, if I understand the question, we might not be able to rely on the CIA exemption, but there would still be significant separation of powers concerns. So there would still be a question of whether the statute could apply to that presidential commission where he's seeking direct advice from a group of advisors.
Was the 9/11 commission a FACA commission?
I don't believe it was. I'd have to look back at that, but I don't believe it was a FACA commission. It was created by Congress, and I don't believe it was created.
Oh, it was Congress?
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
But was it created by statute? Because it could still be. Do it by statute?
I'm now not confident in my recollection, so I'm hesitant to say anything. but I believe it was. I know it was created by Congress. And just again, there's not a need to reach this merits question because we're here on mandamus, and there is no indisputable duty that the National Security Council owes to the plaintiff.
Thank you, Ms. Clark.
Thank you.
Two quick points, if I may.
Number one, the subsequent custodian issue I don't think is an issue at all, as Judge Collier addresses in her opinion. The NSC has the documents right now, and it's a question of whether or not the documents exist, and not as to who has the documents. That's the controlling issue there. And the final point I'd like to make is, you know, it's really interesting. If you look at the background of what's going on here, the commission has a website, the commission had a reading room, the commission issued certain documents. My point is here, if it smells like a rose, it looks like a rose, it's a rose. I think this is a FACA commission, and therefore I think the relief that we've requested should be granted. Namely, this case should be remanded back to the district court and a writ should be issued.
Well, that's a peculiar position for someone interested in promoting disclosure. The president says, I'm forming a FACA commission and I'm putting the CIA in charge of it, and I want its report to be utilized by the CIA. But I also think as you go along, you ought to make available to the public anything you can confidently make available to the public. Why should that put him in jeopardy?
Because I think we had some very wise people that wrote this order, and I think they're familiar with FACA, and they didn't want to expand the powers of FACA. I really think that's what's behind all that. Putting in the CIA, that little thing at the end there, this, you know, the CIA shall utilize this report, I think was a very smart move.
I'm not sure that if it weren't in there, we wouldn't be here with the same argument.
Perhaps, Your Honor.
The whole purpose of the commission, a large purpose, was to inform the intelligence agencies on how they should be changing the way they do their job.
Sure. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Zaire.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Fine, thank you.
Thank you.
Stand, please.